Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show as I speak. It's Saturday, March 30th, 2024. Yes, an unusual Saturday recording for the Ben Jarofsky Show. We're just breaking out of the habit of Monday through Friday. That's like a world without boundaries or borders or what have you. Anyway, as I always do before I start the interview with my distinguished guest who's waiting, something in the news, and this caught my eye. Richard Phelan died the other day. Richard Phelan was the president of the Cook County Board, and he's best known for restoring abortion services to Cook County Hospital. Follow me on this little history lesson, folks. Abortions used to be allowed at Cook County Hospital, and then George Dunn, president of the Cook County Board in the 1980s at some point, I forget the exact date, banned them. He was a devout Catholic, and it contradicted his religious convictions, so he banned abortions at the hospital. And when he was elected county board president in 1990, Richard Phelan brought them back. And so he is honored for doing so in this obituary that was in the Sun-Times, which includes this quote from David Axelrod, noted Chicago political strategist and who worked for Richard M. Daley and Barack Obama. Axelrod says of Phelan, for whom he worked, quote, "Phelan was a reformer, but a pragmatic one." I'm like, what the hell does that mean? He was a reformer, but a pragmatic one. Like, there is something being sent in code to us in that statement. I got to figure that out. So you're either a reformer or you're pragmatist. One contradicts the other. You either believe in the things you believe in and you stand up for the things that you believe in, or you don't believe in anything and you cut deals. And it's like the but in that sentence connecting to. Okay, you could be a pragmatic reformer in knowing, you know, okay, I may win today, lose tomorrow, but I'm going to keep on keeping on. You know what I'm saying? I guess, I suppose, but he was a reformer. But the but is the message. The but is the message to the larger people out there. Don't worry about this one, okay? He just talks that way for the cameras. Push come to shove, cut a deal, look the other way. And let's just consider it within the context of Phelan's greatest achievement as an elected official. The story is all about how he used his power to restore abortion services at Cook County Hospital. They were banned in part because of movement by Democrats being pragmatic. Follow me in this, ladies and gentlemen. In the 1970s, there was a call for having abortion legalized, taking it out from the back alleys, if you will. considering it as a health service that should be granted to all women. But in the 70s, there was something called the Hyde Amendment. Ancient history. I apologize to all you youngsters out there for even mentioning. I always apologize to my young listeners whenever I give a history lesson. But this was an amendment proposed by Henry Hyde, a congressman from DuPage County, which was supported by many Democrats. And the notion was that we will kind of like look the other way at the fact that abortion is legal in this country, thanks to Roe, the ruling in Roe, which has been abolished. But we will not allow any governmental money for abortion. So our core constituents, if we're in an upscale swing district, will get a right to have an abortion. But poor women won't get a right to have an abortion. That was a pragmatic stand. That was like sending a message to a certain group of women that they were okay and they weren't going to get theirs, but excluding many more women. It was a reform move, but a pragmatic one. So within the article praising him for being unpragmatic, they're praising him for being one of those Democrats who betrays their principles at the drop of a hat. Does anybody know the irony anymore? Does irony not exist as like a literary device anymore? That's one of the most ironic things I've ever read, or at least I read today. All right, without further ado, I'm going to bring on my distinguished guest who's very patiently sitting through that oration. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
No, I like it when you do the history lessons. Thank you for having me, Ben. Rosana Rodriguez here, Alderwoman of the 33rd Ward.
Yes. Dear friend of the Ben Jarofsky Show. Comes on all the time. Hasn't been on in a while. So welcome back, Rosana. And I know you were just like, yeah, Ben, I'm just tired of talking sometimes. I need a break. So I gave you your space. I gave you your break. But now you're back. Is that more or less accurate?
I think that's accurate. Thank you.
So a couple things that I want to talk to you about. One is a triumph, your triumph in the 33rd Ward and your movement's triumph. And then another is like a counterpunch, which is not directed at you directly, but at Byron Sixel Lopez, alderman of the 25th Ward. Who will be a guest on the show next week. And one thing you say about Byron, that guy is always ready to talk. So he never gets tired of talking. He's like me, never tired of talking. All right. So Rosana, let me just do a little backdrop and then you take it away. So Rosana was elected a first time in 2019. Mini history lesson, folks. I'm not going to go back that far. In 2019, and she defeated the remnants of the Richard Mell machine. Go back and read about him, ladies and gentlemen. Richard Mell was a powerful ward boss in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s. Then he got exhausted being a boss, and he turned things over to his daughter, Deb Mell. Because I'm tired. Let Deb run the show. He's also known for being the father-in-law of Rod Blagojevich, former governor of the state of Illinois. You all know Blago, Trump guy in Illinois now. And so that Blago-Mell machine was up against Rosana in 2019. She beat it by a handful of votes to be elected, and then was won re-election in 2023, and just last a couple weeks ago, defeated Iris Martinez to be the Democratic committeeman of the 33rd Ward. Iris Martinez, longtime Mel ally. So triumph in the 33rd Ward. That's the mini history lesson. Rosana, you beat the Mel machine. Talk about that. Go ahead.
Again and again and again. When we won our first election, which we won by 13 votes, not a handful. I'm going to set the record straight here. It was 13 votes, Ben. It was not a handful. It's two handfuls and a little bit more.
Two handfuls.
but I mean, we have to put into context that we did that with very little money. And we did that because we had created an independent political organization in the 33rd Ward 4 years previous, which I also want to shout out 33rd Ward Working Families and 30 and United Neighbors of the 35th Ward. Our 10-year anniversary is going to be next year, and we're going to do a joint party because after we founded those two IPOs, independent political organizations, we have been able to organize to a level that has gotten us so many wins. And we have been able to create an incredible coalition of Northwest Side electeds, progressive Northwest Side electeds, particularly Latinos. So when I won my election, Iris Martinez decided to run for ward committee person. Aaron Goldstein was the committee person at that point. I think he was only in for 4 years. He beat Dick Mel in the election, and Iris decided to be committee person. To be honest, when I won my first election, I don't think that I had a huge understanding of how important the committee person seat is. I was not very interested in doing that and serving that role. We were very busy trying to figure out how we wanted to run the ward, what were the processes that we wanted to establish, how do we navigate the systems that have been created that essentially work against the interest of people. So we went deep into trying to create a new way of doing politics. And I think that we were very successful in that. But then fast forward, we end up, Cristina Pasiones Salas was the person that was put in the 20th district seat, appointed also, but she went through a community process before she was appointed. She came to talk to the IPOs of the Northwest Side, and we had a panel, and she answered questions. And at the end, the people were okay with the appointment, and she was brought in by Iris Martinez at that point. But she came from movement. I do not think that Iris Martinez knew who Cristina was when she appointed her. And of course, immediately after she was appointed, she started working with us, and Iris was determined to have somebody else on that seat. So when Cristina Pasiones Ayala steps down from the 20th district seat to go work for the Brandon Johnson administration, somebody needs to be appointed. We, of course, raised our voices again and said that we needed a community process, but that's not how these work. So, the committee people had their closed door process, and they appointed Natalie Toro, who had previously ran for Cook County Board Commissioner and was beat by Anthony Quesada, who is part of our movement, and he is now the commissioner. So at that point, I think it was, we cannot afford for Iris Martinez to continue to be on this seat if what we are going to see is that if there is a vacancy, we're just going to have the same process happen over and over. And it is not in our interest. It is not in our interest of movement, of the people. So I was convinced that I needed to run. I ran and I won. And it was kind of a bizarre election cycle. I didn't really campaign much for my specific seat. We focus our resources mostly on Graciela. Graciela Guzman, who won the Democratic nomination for the 20th District Senate state. But because people know me already, I had already won my election very comfortably, my re-election. I didn't really have to spend money or a lot of effort additionally to what we were spending for the Graciela campaign. There was several mailers that were sent by Iris Martinez talking about me. The same thing as always, which it has, I have come to sort of question the sanity and the judgment of people in the establishment that run these campaigns, because you can't actually, you know, convince people not to vote for a progressive candidate because you say that they're defund or because they're socialist or because they want to, you know, tax the rich. But I mean, they spend a lot of money on those, and now I am going to frame them. I'm gonna frame them so they can be in my living room because they're pretty incredible.
No, they never learn, Rosanna. And I think I've said this many times. I've said this many times. I've written, but I've said it many times with you on the show. I call it the Helen Schiller rule of Chicago politics. Helen Schiller, of course, was the legendary reform alderwoman of the 1990s in Uptown. And Mayor Daley would run people against her all the time, and she would eke out these wins. And then in the aftermath, the mainstream media would be like, how did it happen? How did she beat them? My point is, the people of Chicago, though I mock them and make fun of them all the time, have never, ever once, Rosanna, never once in the entire history of Chicago punished an alderperson for standing up to the mayor. If you stand up for the mayor, for your people and your convictions, you will be reelected. Say what you will about Chicagoans, and I criticize them all the time. They like what they call stand-up people. If you stand up for what you believe, you don't sell out, you don't betray your principles, and particularly if you're standing up for poor people. This has been the experience across the board. I don't know why the males of the world think it's going to change at any time soon. They never learn, you know, because they never stood up for anything, I guess. So I don't know. I don't know what's in the minds of machine-like people in the city of Chicago who are reformers, but pragmatic ones. That's my belief. And I think you're now 3 for 3, right? 2019, yeah. 2023, 2024. You think mm-hmm. they went 3 for 3?
Yeah.
Right. They always go, oh, she's soft on crime.
The particular mailer that they sent was incredible because it shows me wearing this fake fur coat that I have. And underneath, I had an Eat the Rich hoodie. And that Eat the Rich hoodie is from United Auto Workers when they were on strike. I'm wearing that hoodie with a fake fur coat that I have. And that the picture was taken at a press conference for Bring Chicago Home on the day that we got it out of committee. There was a press conference. And I was wearing, you know, that combo of a fake fur with a hoodie that says Eat the Rich. And it became a thing, like, you know, like some people picked up on it and were like, oh, look at her with a fur coat and saying Eat the Rich. That's so hypocritical. People don't know about thrift stores, apparently. But they sent a mailer that had a picture of me on that day with that fashion choice and then talking about me being a socialist, talking about me wanting to defund the police and not standing with police, talking about me offending Italian Americans and talking about me offending Jewish people because, you know, all of my involvement with the ceasefire resolution, but also because I voted no on the resolution of unconditional support to Israel. And it was very convoluted because there were so many things that they were trying to say about me in the same mailer with the picture of me with the Eat the Rich. And I think that, you know, people saw that mailer and were like, oh, this is my candidate. I went to vote for me because I won with 61% of the vote. It's like the most, the biggest percentage I've gotten. So so proud.
No, it really was. Yeah. It was unbelievable. You mopped the floor with her. Yeah. You know what's kind of weird? It kind of is like a sort of similar to what happened when Andre Vasquez beat Pat O'Connor. Remember that? O'Connor. Mm-hmm. So Andre Vasquez, the alderman of the 40th Ward, had a previous existence where he was a rapper and he had misogynist lyrics and questionable lyrics, to put it mildly. And so at a debate against O'Connor, the incumbent, who was so unrapper like, if you ever saw Pat O'Connor, he'd be like,
the antithesis
of a rapper. It'd be like me rapping, yo, what up? You know, I mean, like, come on, man. Okay, who's kidding who? Although I just learned this one rap line that I can I'm gonna blow it now. No. The G is silent like lasagna. Listeners out there, go look it up. I know a lot of you are like, wow, that just blew my mind. But anyway, so O'Connor starts reading some of the more questionable lyrics that Andre had dropped or written, whatever you call it, back in his day when he was Andre the rapper as opposed to Andre the dealmaker. it just bombed. Like, the audience is going, why are you like cursing at us right now? You know, I'm like, dude, it's not working. So
it's definitely it can be a comedy show. At points, sometimes it can get really dramatic, but most of the time it's just absurd, you know, like it just feels absurd most of the time, I feel. Because for Iris Martinez to decide to run again instead of retiring at this point was absurd. Like, to me, it was completely absurd. We didn't even feel the need to campaign against her. Heavily, you know, there was no investment made in campaigning against her, because we knew, like, the polls were telling us how unpopular she was. So I honestly don't understand her decision to run again. I think that she had a very long political career and she could have just decided, you know what, it's time. But interestingly, Dick Mel sort of did the same thing. At some point he did retire, but he came back, you know, to like run Sammy Martinez against me. He was campaigning for Natalie Toro in his area. He knocked on doors for Natalie Toro. I think sometimes for some people of that generation, I think, and when I say generation, I don't mean specifically the age, but like the political reality that they like were a part of. They sort of got stuck on the way in which they were operating and could never understand when times changed and when people were demanding other things from their elected officials. And I think that they never got there.
Yeah, no. I mean, I guess I keep coming back to that quote I began. He was a reformer, but a pragmatic one. And I never see the pragmatism on the part of the machine to folks. So Richard Mel came out of the Daily Machine. Follow me in this, ladies and gentlemen. Old man Daily Machine, not baby Daily. Old man Daily Machine. And people like this, I've seen very few of them who could adjust to lefties winning. They like perpetually fighting against lefties. They love Republicans. They can make deals with Republicans. They can make deals with MAGA. They can make deals with like squishy liberals. But when it comes to lefties, they hate lefties. They hate people who stand. They hated Karen Lewis. They hate Stacey Davis Gate. Anybody who just stands up for a principle about helping poor people, they hate Rosanna. And so the notion like of a Richard Mel or a Governor Blagojevich or a Iris Martinez coming to their senses and going, oh my God, my ward has changed, my district's changed, I'm going to go with the flow here and reach out to Rosanna, reach out to Graciela, whatever, reach out to just these new younger voices that are emerging. It's just,
yeah. You know,
I don't even know what to say. It's like me embracing rap music. I can't do it. I'm stuck in 1979.
But then also, I think also is like looking at what is happening, right? Because after we won our first election, it was clear that we had started something powerful, right? Like a very powerful organization, and that has only grown. So at this point, we have elected how many people? Like, we have a cohort of, like, I lost count. How many people are in our close cohort? Like, we have Delia, we have Lilian Jimenez, we have Jesse Fuentes, we have Will Guzzardi, we have Daniel Laspara, we have Carlos, we have Anthony in the county, we have Ruth in the 30th ward, we have Omar Aquino. It's a real, I mean, it is a big cohort of people that are operating together. And the thing is that our way of operating is not the transactional way in which they were used to operating. We are operating from principle, right? So we don't just turn our backs into each other for whatever. We are trying to accomplish things together. And that's very unlike what politics have been in Chicago. Like, these very powerful coalitions of people that will stand with one another because they're shared communities, because they come from community, right? And I don't think that they have been able to identify how what we are doing is different from what they did before. And we have had this conversation before in your show where we talk about how these machines, like the Dick Mel, for example, operation in the 33rd ward had, like, you know, was based on patronage. And then you had these people that have gotten jobs and their families, and they would come and they would pass lit and they would go knock on doors and tell people vote for Dick Mel or vote for. And that's not what we do. We knock on doors and we actually have conversations with people that are based on the policy. Like, the people who knock on doors know what they're talking about because they care about what they're talking about. They're not knocking on doors because they got a job. They're knocking on doors because they actually want something like Bring Chicago Home to happen, or treatment, not trauma, or participatory budgeting, or, you know, like, you name it. There are so many things that we have been working for and that people understand the need and the urgency of these things. Fundamentally, I don't think that they have been able to understand that this is different, that we're operating from a very different place. Because there's no patronage, like, there's no jobs that you give people so that they go. I mean, not in our space anyways. Other people have continued to do that, but not in our space, you know? So it has been interesting to me to see how the remnants of the machine have not been able to identify that this is a different kind of operation. Mm.
Even though they know that the world has changed. And I mean, the patronage system was dismantled by a series of rulings in a federal court case. So the world that existed when Richard Mel got involved in politics doesn't exist today. You can't put together a patronage army of city workers. City workers have constitutionally protected rights that enable them to do their work, go home, do their thing with their family, whatever they want to do, watch the Bulls play, watch Illinois play, whatever they want to do. They don't have to go knock on doors for you. In the old days, they had to keep their job. That was the machine. I always love it. I always laugh. Stacey Davis Gates had a conversation. They call the CTU the new machine. I'm like, no, they're not. No teacher will lose his or her job if they give the middle finger to Stacey Davis Gates on a political issue. They're not going to lose their job. Okay. It doesn't work that way. And metaphorical middle finger. Okay. That's
metaphorically.
Yeah.
I got that. Yeah. As soon as you said it, he's talking metaphorically.
Yes. Metaphorically. it's a different world.
But that said, I don't know. I mean, I imagine that you saw the article that came out in the Tribune about Iris Army at the Cook County Clerk's office, and how most of the people that passed, you know, to collect signatures for her candidacy worked in her office, and it was a lot of people, right? So I guess, yes, patronage is dead in the city of Chicago, but there is not necessarily a complete death.
I mean, let's put it this way. It was nothing like back in Mel and his...
No, definitely heyday. Not. Oh my definitely God. Not.
Two or three people in every precinct, for crying out loud. All right, but I thought you were going to go here, so I'll go here instead. The remnants of machine mentality still exist in the city of Chicago in terms of, man, if you step out of line, they come at you strong. And now I'm going to shift gears to Byron Cisha Lopez. And again, Byron will be on the show this Thursday, so you can hear what he has to say about all this stuff. Byron Cisha Lopez, alderman of the 25th Ward, maybe the leftiest alderman in the Chicago City Council. And Rosanna smiling, going, I am Ben Nutt, or Byron. that's a battle. I don't even know how you could like have that battle. You know, I'm leftier than you. But Byron is also a staunch defender of Palestinian rights and a staunch believer in the right for Palestinians to return to lands that are now claimed by Israel. As such, he was at a rally, I think it was about a week ago, mm-hmm. Rosanna?
Last week.
I've lost track of time. Mm-hmm. Before he got there, a flag was burned, an American flag was burned, in protest of the United States funding Israel. Mm-hmm. In its war against Palestinians in Gaza. And since then, he was not there when the flag was burned, but he came and spoke, and he was standing next to the remnants of the burnt out flag. And since then, a group of aldermen have moved to have Byron stripped of his chairmanship as the Housing Committee chair, City of Chicago. And I believe there will be a special meeting this Monday. I don't know if they'll get enough people to actually have the meeting, but they've called for a special meeting on Monday to vote on stripping him of his chairmanship. This is straight up. This is old school. step out of line, the man come and take you away. Politics, and they're punishing him for a lot of things, Rosanna. But ultimately, they don't like Byron. I'm just telling you straight up, I know how the city council operates. I know the mentality of aldermen, okay? They'll say, oh, it's because he was at this rally where they burnt the flag. They don't like the man. Do you follow me? They're just punishing him because he speaks his mind, because he stands up for what he believes in, even if they don't believe in it. It bears him. It irritates them. They can't stand him, and they're getting their revenge. That's how I read it. Your thoughts?
Well, you said it before. They hate lefties. They hate socialists. They hate anybody that is going to stand up to the real estate industry, to big interest, anybody that is going to advocate for the poor. And that's Byron. And you know, I think that you can see a pattern. They tried to do something similar to me at some point with the Columbus situation. And, you know, they came after me and some people asked that I resign from the committee, but they didn't really have support. So it kind of fizzled out. And then, you know, what happened with Carlos can also be brought to the surface, because we're talking about the two most powerful committees that have to do with real estate in the city of Chicago. And the person that that first spoke about what Carlos did was Raymond Lopez, who tweeted about it. And he lied because Carlos didn't do any of the things that Raymond Lopez said. There were other things that then, you know, were brought up by other people. But what actually caused all of the chaos and like outrage that was directed at punishing Carlos in the hardest possible way came from a tweet that had false information. They are now making this huge thing about Byron. Byron was at a protest where he was asked to speak, where somebody exercised their First Amendment right to burn a flag, and it was a veteran burned a flag in protest to the U.S. funding of the genocide in Gaza. Byron showed up and spoke, and all of a sudden, he needs to resign from his chairmanship in the Committee on Housing. It makes absolutely no sense. There's no rule in our rules of orders that says that if you go and speak at a rally that the rest of the people in council don't like, you have to resign. What is that? So I personally, I'm outraged at this. I think that, you know, some people in council have been testing the waters to see how they can push us out. What are the routes that they can take in order to get rid of us? And they have been wanting to. Like, they hate socialists in there. They hate people that are going to be bringing up policies that, you know, hurt rich people or that are inconvenient for their donors. And I honestly think that that's what's happening right now. And Byron being one of the most vocal people in city council and chair of a very important committee for the real estate industry, you know, is now being threatened with this. I think that it is ridiculous. I really hope that the majority of my colleagues can identify that. Some of the people who brought this up and that held a whole press conference were at a Trump rally, you know, before the January 6th, before the attack in Congress in January 6th, the insurrection. And there were insurrectionists there at that rally. Nobody went and like censored Sposato or Napolitano for doing that. Nobody asked them to step down from their committees. It's wild that they are trying to punish somebody for speaking at a rally and exercising First Amendment rights. I think that this is way beyond what I expected that the dynamics in city council will turn into.
Well, oh my God, there's so much to unpack there. First of all, I just need to understand this, make this clear. Are you saying that there were aldermen who were at the January 6th insurrection? I just want to make that clear. I don't believe there were any aldermen.
No. There was a rally.
Okay.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
Where some of the people, actually, some of the people that were at the rally are now serving prison sentences for being at the January 6th insurrection. So this was, yeah, and these people have been present at Trump rallies several times. So it is, I think it's very hypocritical, right? The way that they have decided that they own sort of like patriotism, they own how we need to speak about our country. They have decided that you cannot criticize the government. One of the things that was brought up, I believe Taliaferro said this to the news, that it was unacceptable that he was standing in front of a banner that said that the U.S. was complicit in genocide. But it is. The U.S. is being complicit in genocide. And we should be able to say that. We should be able to criticize government and not be told by our colleagues that if you criticize the president or if you criticize your government, you have to be stripped of your committee. That makes absolutely no sense. Unless you're trying to be an authoritarian, which is the opposite that they are talking about, because they supposedly, when the people who are part of this that are veterans are saying that they fought for the American way of life. Isn't that like free expression? Isn't that like people being able to say whatever they want to say? So what is it that you're fighting for? I'm so confused.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. This could be called the irony show, because we began with the irony of a reformer. but a pragmatic one, okay? Which means reformer, I don't know what it means. It's sending some kind of coded message. A reformer who will look the other way. Who knows what it means? I don't speak Axelrodian, so someone will have to translate it for me. But my point is that there's been so much denigration of the American flag by MAGA. It's an ongoing. There's so much denigration of American protocol by MAGA. I will point this out again and again. Donald Trump is now beginning his rallies by singing along to the national anthem as it's sung by a choir of insurrectionists who did a recording. I'm not making this up, Rosanna. It is the recording itself is a denigration of the national anthem. The recording itself is the most god-awful, out-of-tune, disgraceful attempt at singing the national anthem. And they're singing along with it. And furthermore, Rosanna, Donald Trump doesn't take his hat off when he's singing. If you go to any basketball game, my beloved Chicago Bulls, they'll say, rise, please, and take off your hats as we sing the national anthem. Now, I know a few hardcore lefties who don't rise. You know, I'm not rising, Ben. I'm like, come on, man, just stand up, okay? It's what we do. No, Ben, I'm not doing it, and I'm not taking off my hat. Rosanna, I rise, I take off my hat, I do it, okay? So, you know, different strokes for different folks, I guess. The point is, Donald Trump keeps his hat on. Where's the outrage? It's selective outrage, Rosanna. It's not like there's no principle anywhere. They took the Confederate flag into the halls of Congress in an attempt to overturn the election of Joe Biden. They wanted to end democracy in our country, Rosanna, on behalf of the Confederacy. They took Donald Trump flags into Congress. So, and I will bet you, they will burn the American flag. If they disapproved of something that Joe Biden did, President Biden did, they would burn the American flag and they would say they would have a right to it. They're such hypocrites, Rosanna. I'm sorry. I just have to say it. Do you follow me?
No, you're totally right about it. But there is no outrage about that. The outrage is when somebody stands up and speaks about the atrocities that are being committed or speaks about how the U.S. needs to stop funding genocide. I mean, when we passed the ceasefire resolution in city council, one of the things that I encounter over and over while I was making calls was that the people were nervous about criticizing the president. And I had conversations with people like, if this was Trump, that would be doing exactly the same thing. Would you be saying something? Like, why is it that we feel like we owe this loyalty when somebody that it's leading a country is doing the things in our name? You don't feel like you have to speak up and tell your president, this is not okay. This is not what I elected you to do. And this is not how I want you to use our resources. How is it possible that we as elected officials can sit in a body and say, oh no, I cannot criticize the president. You cannot criticize the president? What?
Okay. So I will attempt to answer that question. But first, I want to point something out. And this is kind of like, but thinking about this, I think about this all the time. So I'm now lived fairly long, many years. Hope to live many, many more. But the reality is I've seen a lot. And so I begin with a history lesson about local politics. I will now go back, Rosanna, before you were born. There have been so many atrocities committed in my name with U.S. tax dollars that I have paid with Republican presidents, Democratic presidents. This goes back to when I was a little kid. There was something called the Vietnam War. Youngsters, look it up. I'm not going to give you a history lesson on the Vietnam War. I'm not going to tell you about Cambodia. I'm not going to tell you about the midnight bombing, the Christmas bombings. that Nixon and Kissinger cooked up to keep that war going longer. Okay. I'm not going to give us history lesson. I'm not going to tell you about the wars that began at the start of this century. Two wars, Rosanna, after 9/11. Revenge for 9/11. They just invaded Iraq. What do they have to do with it? And so this is happening my whole life. Slaughters throughout the world my whole life. This is what it means to a certain degree to be a taxpayer in this country. Like, things are going to happen in your name that you don't sanction. So that's a very difficult, painful, and challenging reality. And Americans got to deal with it. I mean, it's sort of like if you're a citizen of Russia and now your country's waging war in Ukraine, or you're a citizen of Israel and you see what's going on in Gaza. You have to figure out, like, what are you going to do? What kind of stand are you going to take? How far will you go? Or will you not take any stand and just say, well, there's, I'm helpless?
But and I think that there's a lot of ignorance, too, as of, like, what the U.S. flag represents in a lot of other places. Yes, it is your flag, but for other countries, like, it has a different meaning. It means destruction. It means devastation. It means colonialism. It means imperialism. Under the U.S. flag, the island town of Vieques was bombed for 60 years to practice for war. Like, grasping the fact that the United States decided that it was okay to use an island town of a territory where 9,000 people live, and they were going to drop 500-pound bombs continuously in that island so that they could practice. Regardless of if it was going to cause cancer to people, if it was going to pollute the land, if it was going to kill anybody. And they did kill somebody. And it took a huge fight to get them out of there. But for 60 years, the American flag covered bombings of people who the only reason why they would be bombed is because we are territory of the United States. And that's just one example, right? Like, the idea that we cannot understand why people would take actions like those, that you cannot step out of your identity as an American to see why would anybody be so angry that they would burn an American flag, or that they would say this or that, or that they would protest a national symbol. It just tells me that there is a level of either ignorance or just complete obliviousness to international politics and relations, right? And the power dynamics of the United States in relationship to the rest of the world.
Yeah. And I'm going to throw a curveball at you now, having said all this and listened to you say that. This is the only country I know. I was born here. It's a miracle to get me out of the city of Chicago, Rosanna. Get me to a different country. I'm just like lodged and linked to this country.
But what does that have to do with being able to understand why people would be angry at your flag? You can love the United States. I'm going to tell you something, Ben. I left Puerto Rico. And when I left Puerto Rico, I cannot explain to you how much pain I went through when I left my homeland. And it still hurts. But I came to Chicago and I started organizing here, and I have really come to know the city. And at this point, I'm going to tell you that I love Chicago as much as I love Puerto Rico. I love the city. The city has become, like, deeply rooted inside of me. And as somebody that, you know, is in love with a U.S. city, I live in the United States. I can definitely understand why people would be angry, why people would do what they do. And particularly in this particular case, it was a U.S. veteran who burned the American flag. It was not even somebody that is angry at the U.S. because they did whatever. It's somebody that served the United States in uniform.
That was like the point I was going on to make was this is the only country I know, so I reserve the right to both love it and be really mad at it. And most of my life I've spent railing against the local government. Okay, that's which I've lived in this city for all these years. It's like, why do I stay here? I don't know. I need my head examined. But, you know, I don't see this as a contradiction. That's the point I was going to make.
Oh, I'm sorry. Loving I didn't let you talk.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm used to being interrupted.
sorry, Ben.
All right. It's all good. So, you know, that's the point I'm making. And I can't imagine a million years be motivated so angry to burn the American flag, because I know the impact that has on people. And I'm going to have a conversation about this further on. Like, does it hurt or help the cause you're promoting when you do that? There's all that pragmatic Axelrodian spin you have to think about. But I just couldn't do it myself. At the same time, I'm like, that's what America is. Like, you burn the flag, you know, isn't that our principle of free speech? And I don't even know if like the fact that he's a veteran matter. I hear what you're saying, Rosanna. It's like, why should a veteran get special points toward burning the flag as opposed to somebody else? If you're motivated by opposition to foreign policy of the United States,
no, but the whole point is that the people who are trying to unseat Biden are veterans, and they are saying that this was highly offensive to them. So the only reason why the fact that it was a veteran who burned the flag, so you can be just like it doesn't matter who you are, you should not be questioning somebody's ability to like speak freely. Or to go to whatever rally and say whatever, right?
I hear you.
So the only reason why we're talking about the fact that it's a veteran is because that's the argument that is being used to say that Biden did something awful and immoral or morally reprehensible or whatever it is that, you know, because they're offended because they are veterans. So this is Taliaferro, Gil Villegas, Conway, for example. They are all saying, well, we're veterans and we're offended by this. And Biden has been like, well, it was a veteran who burned the flag. He also has a right to have his own analysis and feel so distant from the patriotism that you feel for a country, right? Like, he doesn't feel identified with that. He feels broken by that. He feels harmed by the ways in which the U.S. has decided to exercise its power. So that's where that comes from. And there's many veterans that feel that way in the United States. And he's not like an isolated case. Like, there's a lot of veterans that feel that way. So that's the only point in making the
fair enough. Now I will raise the wasted time argument, which I'm taking great delight in raising. I'm a student of the wasting time argument. I've been studying the wasting time argument that's been used down through the years. Okay. So for instance, I forget what it was when, during the ROM years, when there was some kind of action that closed the schools for a day, ROM and his chorus of enablers, the Tribune editorial board, Crane's editorial board, Chicago's, and then the Chicago Sun-Times editorial board were like, oh my God, a wasted day for the students of Chicago. They've lost a precious day in the classroom. First of all you guys do is criticize the public schools, say it's a waste of time and a waste of money. All of a sudden, teachers have an action that closes the school. They've wasted
8 valuable hours of study. You guys are so, just listen to yourself, how preposterous it is. Every single one of you in your personal life, if like you were on vacation and your kid had to come home a day late from Christmas vacation and you were in Jamaica or wherever you were, would you go, no, every day in the school system? You guys are such phony. So I've heard it. I've heard the wasted. So in this case, when there was a ceasefire resolution that was debated and discussed in the city council, I remember Cranes. What a waste of time. They're wasting our time. They should be dealing with crime issues. I'm like, I take crime very seriously. It's very important. But it's not like the only thing the city council does is today we're going to get up and talk about crime all day. Anyway. Now we're about to have a special meeting on whether Byron should be kicked out as housing chair because he was at a rally where somebody else, not Byron, burned the flag. Okay? Cranes, Tribune, Sun Times, where's the wasted time editorial coming? I'm waiting for it. To quote Jeanette, I'm waiting. Okay? And I don't see it coming anytime soon, Rosanna. Your thoughts? You've been subjected to the wasting time argument many times yourself, have you not?
Yeah, you know, from my perspective, this really is a freaking waste of time because now I'm here making calls and having conversations with people, and I have a lot of projects that we are trying to work on, right? Like I have treatment, not trauma, that we are really trying to get through. And all of this takes so much work and so many conversations. And all of a sudden, you have to stop everything that you're doing because you need to figure out how to prepare for this nonsense, you know? To me, it is a waste of time. But yes, I think that there are conversations that are important to have, and then there is circus, and then there is things that are purposefully done in order to cause disruption, to cause chaos, and there are people that are professionals at that, right? Like Raymond Lopez is a professional at trying to do things just to cause disruption and chaos. There's several people like that in city council. So this is one example of that. I think that, you know, the ceasefire resolution was a statement of values. This is where we want to stand in the middle of a genocide. In this particular moment, this is a personal attack against somebody who has, it's a pattern, right, of attacks against leftists in city council that are designed to cause disruption, to cause chaos, and to give their best shot to be able to get rid of us. So for them, it's not a waste of time. So I guess wasting time is definitely relative to who is trying to get an outcome out of.
Yeah, a whole concept of wasting time. I'm going to have to study that, think about that, and ponder that. I'm not even sure I would identify this as a waste of time. I know it's a tremendous waste of energy. I appreciate energy, that.
Definitely, yeah. Yes.
It will force
resources.
Yeah, sure. Resources, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a diversion from putting that energy toward things like treatment, not trauma, like reopening mental health clinics. It just blows my mind. We're all insane, and yet we still can't seem to get it together to open the mental health clinics. It's just like this city.
I think every one of these incidents is further like evidence.
Yes, absolute evidence. We've completely lost our mind. I just want to say this, my old friends, Raylo, Nick Spazzato, Donald Trump is bat shit crazy. Just listen to him sometimes, okay? You know, we are heading toward fascism in this country as we speak. The least of your worries is this veteran who burnt that flag and Byron Sixer Lopez. But that said, Rosanna, I'm hesitant to use the waste of time explanation or justification or argument, because I do believe it illustrates larger points. So in that regard, you get what I'm saying? It's kind of like
educational.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do agree. I think every time that we have a discussion like that in city council or an incident like that, we get to further explain, right, the political moment that we are in. And you just said we're going towards fascism. I think that it is very important to understand that what's happening here is a group of people, a group of council members that are trying to curtail and ban free expression, essentially, if you are a city council member. And that's a very dangerous precedent to set, that you're going to remove somebody from a chairmanship because they went and said something that you didn't like. Well, you don't like that somebody grabbed a microphone and talked badly about the actions that the U.S. government is taking. You don't like that somebody went to a protest to speak where somebody burned a flag because they were so angry about the actions that the United States is taking. It's dangerous. It is dangerous to use your legislative power to prevent people from being able to freely speak or to dissent. That is exactly what we're talking about here right now. So, yes, I believe that it is important to use these opportunities to further educate, to further explain. I honestly would rather be doing treatment of trauma work or peace book work or healthy homes work or participatory budgeting work, or, you know, but I do understand that whenever these things happen, because you're not going to be able to prevent certain people from doing certain things, yes, the conversation should happen. And we, you know, we should be able to illustrate our point.
Yeah. And so, we'll close by this, with this little civics lesson. And I'm admitting I'm ignorant when I ask this question. I don't know all the rules that govern the Chicago City Council, if not memorized them. And usually when I understand them, I forget them instantly. So they're of no use the next time. So is there going to be, to have a meeting where they address this, you have to have a certain number of aldermen present. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, you need quorum. You need 26
alders. So you need 26. So do you think they're going to get 26 alders on the floor?
I still don't know. We're trying to figure that out.
Wow. Okay. So this could all...
That's part of the energy that goes into this kind of thing, because now, you know, I spend my weekend trying to figure out... who's going to be there? Who's not going to be there?
Or just here's a radical idea: just everybody show up and vote it down. There you go. Yeah, I figured that out. Hey, look at the old guy figured it out. Just get 50 people in a room. All right, this is it. You guys going to vote against Byron? Let's go. Let's put the chip. You know what I'm saying? Let's go. Let's see what happens. It's a basically.
But you do know that it doesn't work like that, and that people have like lots of different like reasonings and fears and allegiances and all of those relationships become incredibly complicated when this kind of thing happens, because people are part like, well, I don't want to be perceived in this way, but then if I do this, then they can do it to me. So it's, you know, there's a lot that goes into the reasoning of what kind of decision you're going to make. And, you know, some people are going to be like, you know what, I'm not just not going to be there.
You know, there's also an argument. You know what, I think I'll just duck this one right now. I don't even think Byron's going to be there. I think maybe I'm wrong. At some point, Byron told me he's got to go out of town. So I don't know. Maybe he'll be there. Maybe he won't. I can't remember what he told me.
Well, the progressives, we are behind Byron in this, and we're going to be there, and we're going to support him. So I am excited to hear the episode on Thursday with Byron, where he's going to say they tried, but they couldn't.
So let's go. How many word questions do you think I'll get in? Byron's the master of talking. So I'm going to... Byron, let me ask a question every now and then, okay? no, man. I've known Byron a long time. He's a good man. He's a good man. His heart
is pure. He's a good man, yes.
In my humble opinion, his heart is pure. All right, Rosanna, thank you so much. Taking your Saturday, setting aside time on your Saturday for me. That's very nice of you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I missed you. I'll be back soon.
Yeah, she'll be back soon. No. She goes, you know, Ben, it wasn't so bad. What the heck? All right. That's Rosanna Rodriguez, Alderwoman of the 33rd Ward, Committee Woman of the 33rd Ward. And once again, defeater of the Richard Mel machine in the 33rd Ward. People are still cheering. Don Benedict and all those guys who failed in the 80s are cheering her on somewhere. All right. Thank you very much, Rosanna. That's Rosanna Rodriguez. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.